From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Earlier this week, Peter Metcalf, the founder of the outdoor equipment company Black Diamond, wrote an op-ed piece for the Salt Lake Tribune calling on state leaders to modify their positions on public land. If they didn't, he said, the Outdoor Retailers Association should take its trade show out of the state. Now, this isn't the first time Metcalf has chastised state leaders, and it's not the first time outdoor retailers have threatened to pull out. So what's different this time? Well, a new incoming administration, for one. But do retailers really mean it this time? Today in the program, we're talking about this story. Will the positions of leaders on public land have consequences for the state? What does the outdoor industry actually do for Utah anyway? And the trade show, what happens if it leaves? Join us after the news.
Take Radio West wherever you go with KUER's mobile app for Android and iPhone. Public radio is always a swipe away with KUER's mobile app, free and available for download right now in your mobile phone's app store.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. When some people read Peter Metcalf's op-ed in the Tribune this week, they could have been forgiven for wondering if they hadn't heard it all before. Metcalf chastised state leaders for their environmental positions, and he suggested the Outdoor Retailers Association consider moving its trade show out of the state. Retailers have been in town this week. They just finished up the winter version of their trade show. Metcalf has said the same things before, a number of times, in fact, reminded the state the outdoor industry plays a critical role in the economy and that they can't take the trade show for granted if they aren't willing to modify their attitude a bit about public land. But this time, Metcalf seems to really mean it. Though it's hard to tell if there's consensus among the other outdoor retailers. Today in the program, we're talking about this story, asking what is different this time, if anything, and exactly what is the economic value of Utah's public land. Joining us first on the program is Brian Maffley. He's public lands reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune, joining us here in the studio. And welcome. Thanks for joining
us. Hey, thank you for having me, Doug.
Peter Metcalf's op-ed, as I said, was pretty direct. And now we're hearing from the founder of Patagonia expressing similar sentiment, Yvonne Chouinard. But you've written about the fact that this has been brewing for some time. Is there any reason to believe that this time something might be different?
You know, that's a good question, and it's hard to know. The outdoor industry leaders have raised this issue time and time again when the contract comes up for renewal, and time again, the OR organizers decide to stay in Salt Lake City. And I think there are huge benefits to that industry to have their trade show here.
On their part. Yep.
It's less expensive than other venues. It's easy to get to. It's in a state that has the type of landscapes that people want to recreate in. Who wouldn't want to come to Salt Lake City in January for the winter show if the alternative was Houston or Orlando, which those cities...
Or Vegas, I've heard.
Or Vegas, yeah. Those three cities, I think, were on the short list last time around in 2015. And it was kind of a no-brainer to keep the show in Salt Lake City. This time might be different, as you said, because we have a Republican administration coming in. We don't know Trump's feelings about public lands at all. That was never an issue during the campaign, and it's hard to know. That said, Peter Metcalf and others in that industry have been extremely frustrated with what they see as a growing hostility toward their industry and public lands being managed for things other than extractive industries and grazing.
Do you think Peter Metcalf is speaking his perspective now of like this is the final straw as kind of an outlier idea, or do you think he's getting some consensus, or can you tell at this point?
I can't tell. I just know when I go to the trade show, I like to ask exhibitors what they think about it, and they say, we really want to stay in Salt Lake City. I feel like there's a consensus among the participants in that trade show that they like being here. So that said, it's like, why would you cause your industry all this hardship just to make a political point? Maybe there are other ways to get your point across and flex the political muscle that they really are entitled to, considering how much of an economic contribution they make to this state.
How much do they make to this state? I mean, Metcalf has said he wants to use the trade show as muscle to influence public policy. How much muscle do they have?
Yeah. Well, the industry, you know, they use these numbers for the industry as a whole contribution to the state at $12 billion, and I just have a hard time swallowing that number.
Outdoor industry does.
Yeah. But what we can count on is the show itself has an enormous economic shot, $40 to $50 million a year in direct spending in Utah. And then there's this other thing that helps Utah brand itself as the premier destination for outdoor-oriented recreation. And when those 15, 20,000 people go home, you know, they'll talk about the great skiing they just had. That kind of word-of-mouth kind of discussion among these are opinion leaders in their communities. I mean, it's really helping Utah really be the premier destination for outdoor recreation.
Another thing you hear from Metcalf is that there is a larger, maybe harder to measure impact on the state's economy for the recreation industry being there. That it draws in, for example, people in high-tech industries and those kinds of things. That there's a larger, harder to measure value to it.
Peter Metcalf has raised that point time and time again, and I think there's a lot of validity to that. I think it's really interesting that here at a time when the state is complaining about how public land management by the federal government is constraining economic development, that we have one of the most vibrant economies in the country right now, and we are the fastest growing state. That doesn't jibe with what the governor and others in the state government have been saying at all. You would think that we would be a backwater, and we're far from it. That said, I really believe that there is a strong case to be made that public lands management as a place to recreate is helping grow the economy. However, that growth seems to be focused in the urban areas, and places like San Juan County are getting left behind.
That's the big question here. Yeah. What about that contention that we'll hear a little bit later in the program, that these jobs aren't coming to rural communities like San Juan County, that they're in fact focused on the Wasatch Front, and that in some cases this idea of recreation is displacing good jobs in these rural communities.
Yeah, I don't really know about that. Why is San Juan County not as economically vibrant as they'd like to be? I think it has more to do with market forces that made oil and gas drilling not very attractive in remote parts of Utah. The price of uranium is never recovered from the Fukushima disaster. You know, timber, I don't know. I just don't see that federal land management policies are to blame. On the other hand, in San Juan County, I think there's this feeling that they don't want to be a playground for overcompensated, privileged folks from the Wasatch Front or European tourists. But that said, it's like, well, there's some economic opportunities that are being left behind. And I think it's really interesting that, you know, here they are home to two national parks already, the Glen Canyon National Recreation Area and Canyonlands. And yet they don't really seem to see a lot of benefit from that. And they have a world-class climbing destination just up the road from Monticello in Indian Creek. It's becoming more and more popular. Well, those climbers aren't spending much money in Monticello. And why is that? It might be because there isn't much of a reason for them to go into Monticello. So it seems like Cortez, Colorado, or Moab are experiencing the economic benefits of having that awesome climbing destination in San Juan County rather than San Juan County.
So you're saying these communities should try at least to embrace the recreational opportunities, and they're not?
I don't think they are. Bluff definitely is. Blanding is paying lip service with their marketing slogan of Gateway to Adventure. But other than some ATV shops, what are they doing to cater to people looking for adventure in Cedar Mesa, which is just a few miles up the road?
You also hear, though, that there's no comparison in the quality of jobs between extractive industries, which pay higher money, they say, versus service jobs.
I think that's a weak argument. Is it? Yeah. I mean, a good example of that is the, you know, there was this lumber mill in Escalante that closed down not too long ago, and folks like to blame federal land management policies for that, and maybe that's the case. It can't possibly have had much to do with the National Monument right outside of town, the Grand Staircase in 1996, because that timber was harvested in the Dixie National Forest. However, you know, when you peeled away at those jobs at that lumber mill, it was a good employer in Escalante. You know, they were $12 an hour jobs. They were often seasonal. And gee, I mean, that sounds a lot like a tourism-oriented job to me. And, you know, oil and gas jobs are notoriously fickle. They come and they go. Those guys who were making, you know, allegedly $70,000 to drive a truck or work on a rig, well, those jobs come in and then they're gone. And they don't really sustain a community like tourism might be able to. You can count on people coming back year in and year out to go visit the national parks, and we've seen that in spades in the last few years. Yeah,
some observers say that the chances of Utah officials actually getting federal public land, you know, transferred into state control, like that's impossible.
Yeah.
So would the state be willing to compromise on this one? It doesn't seem like they have much of a chance on this anyway.
Yeah, well, it seemed like they were kind of waiting to see who the next Supreme Court justice would be to fill Antonin Scalia's position, and it looks like they might get someone who would be open to the idea of these constitutional arguments they're raising. So maybe they're going to run with it. I don't want to say it's a 0% possibility that the state will someday control all the public land here. But that said, they keep saying, and Spencer Cox has reiterated this, that this isn't about taking away public land, it's about managing it better. And that is kind of an empty promise in that if the state does gain control of the public land, it'll be under enormous political pressure to maximize development. And if lands can't be profitably developed, they'll be almost forced to sell it off because our state requires a balanced budget. And it's hard to balance a budget when you're managing, you know, 31 million acres of land that doesn't pay.
There's a lot of hyperbole in this conversation.
There is.
You've pointed this out. The monument will be a disaster. You hear on one hand, Yvon Chouinard of Patagonia said transferring public land to the state would be a disaster for the economy.
Yeah.
A lot of rhetoric. What do you make of that?
I think it's posturing. I think the monument designation, both Grand Staircase 20 years ago and Bears Ears now, are not going to lead to economic devastation. If anything, the Grand Staircase has shown that it's a wash. If anything, maybe it's put some people out of work. But clearly, Kanab and Escalante, there's things happening there that seem to suggest there's some prosperity coming that's associated with outdoor recreation and tourism. Garfield County seems to be in denial about that. They keep talking over and over again about how the number of high school kids has dropped from 150 to 60 since the monument was designated in 1996. What they're not saying is that might not have anything to do with the monument, but just other changes, socio-demographic changes going on in Garfield County. I've heard that a lot of people are homeschooling kids. There could be a lot of explanations.
But then the rhetoric you hear on the other side. Posturing too?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, who's to say that the economy of Utah will suffer significantly if the state runs the public lands? I don't know. I don't see any good evidence of that. I do see that there'll be some landscapes that people cherish that will be subject to more intensive grazing and mining and oil and gas development that might be hard to swallow. Like, it would be really hard for some people to see the San Rafael Swell get drilled and be turned into a ATV playground. Does that mean the economy of Utah will go down the tubes? And I don't think so.
You think retailers will act? Or, as you've said before, they'll probably just sort of live with the fact that their attitude is different from the state.
Yeah.
But things are good, so we'll stick around.
Yeah. Well, I think the folks who organized that show are really wedded to Salt Lake City. They love it. They love coming here. And for them to find a new city will mean a lot of challenges for them on organizing, on their participants. I just don't see that this is the best way to flex their political muscle. And they might diminish their own show by moving it to a place like Orlando.
Brian Maffley, he is public lands reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune, joined us here in the studio. Thanks very much.
Hey, thank you, Doug.
We'll take a brief break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, this question: would the Outdoor Retailers trade show leave Salt Lake City because of the public land agenda of state lawmakers, and should it? This week, Peter Metcalf, the founder of the outdoor company Black Diamond, wrote an op-ed in the Salt Lake Tribune where he said the trade show should consider leaving if leaders don't moderate their positions on public land. Metcalf joined us from the Outdoor Retailers Convention. So I want to begin by having you deal with what I think you've seen as a kind of misleading impression of what you said in that op-ed. Now, some have perceived the op-ed as kind of this direct threat, on behalf of some in the outdoor industry to leave the state. But that's not necessarily what you're saying. You're not necessarily making a direct threat, at least not now.
That's correct, Doug. What I am saying is that the policies being advocated in regards to Utah's amazing publicly owned landscapes is anathema to and antithetical to the values, the ethos, and the vibrancy of the outdoor industry to recreation in this state. And what I'm stating is that we need the political leadership to align their policies with the vibrancy of our economy, what drives the economy forward, and of course, outdoor recreation in the outdoor industry. And because we're important here, we're one of the largest economic sectors, and certainly our trade show that comes twice a year is the largest trade show that comes twice a year to this state and pumps in somewhere between 40 something to just under 50 million in direct spending each year. And I'm saying that if our political leadership doesn't align with what we need to our continued vibrancy, and if they don't stop exporting it elsewhere, then the membership should demand of the leadership that we move the show to a place that is more simpatico and more aligned with that.
Peter, what's different about what you're saying now? I mean, you've said this before. You've expressed a similar sentiment in times past. Some of your colleagues have said the same thing, that if you cannot, referring to the state, align with our interests more than you are, we're going to leave. So what? But you didn't leave, and so what's different this time?
Okay, so the first time this occurred in a brinksmanship-like way was 2003, and it was with the deals that were cut or the backroom settlements of the RS-2477 litigation in the wilderness inventory areas in the state between then Secretary Norton, then Governor Mike Leavitt. And I did threaten to pull the show. And the show was willing to move. And to the credit of Governor Leavitt, he met with us, created a task force, and actually modified his policies in response to this industry, which he had no idea that it even existed. I remember walking the trade show floor with him, and as he walked in, he literally gasped and said, "I had no idea that an industry of this size had come to Utah or growing up here. This is amazing. What do you guys need?" And I can't say that Governor Leavitt was, quote, the ally, but he was a good working partner, and we continued that with Governor Walker. We had a very good working relationship with Governor Huntsman, and often behind closed doors, but he modified policy numerous times on significant issues to work with us and make sure that he could find a middle road. Just before the president announced his decision to declare Bears National Monument, something that we worked diligently Four, after the PLI process failed to deliver a meaningful, fair, and equitable proposal, let alone cross the finish line, we heard what the congressional delegation, the leadership of the Senate had to say, and the governor, and it was clear to us that it was a policy assault on what is of great value to this industry. And hence, coming into the trade show, this was the perfect opportunity to raise this back to a very high level. We need to draw a line in the sand and say, the policies have got to change. We want to stay here, but we can't bring a show here that celebrates well-stewarded, protected, funded public lands in the state that is the birther state for the attacks that are against everything we stand for.
How are you responding to what you're hearing from some rural county leaders and from some state lawmakers who say that federal regulation and public land is keeping local economies from making the most of their opportunities? How do you respond to that?
I respond to that by saying many of those arguments are fallacious. If you look at the creation of Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument since its creation over 20 years ago, and I agree the way it was perhaps done and announced was not by any means the best. But the fact is, you look back now 20 years and look at the surrounding counties and look at GNP growth, job growth, real estate value, that area is doing much, much better than any other area in southern Utah. If you look at the five national parks we have in this state and how well, and those are all in rural areas, how well the economies of those communities are doing with those national parks, they're doing far better than anywhere else. The fact is, and there's plenty of data to back it up from independent economic research firms to show that public lands that are well protected as monuments or parks, the communities and areas surrounding them do much, much better than other areas. The economy of Utah is transitioning and it has such a great competitive advantage with these landscapes, but they need to be protected. So I don't even like the term regulation. The regulation is a smokescreen for protecting lands, protecting the environment, protecting water, protecting clean air in a way that is good for its citizens in a sustainable manner and for its children and for posterity.
So what exactly do you want? If you could distill it down, Peter, because it sounds pretty specific. It sounds like you're looking for not just a change in attitude from state leaders, but if not actual movement on their legislation to transfer public land, for one, at least some sort of modification of their policies. You're looking for something fairly specific, it sounds like.
Yeah, I can distill it very succinctly down for you. Number one is that the state needs to quit funding the law firms that are doing research into litigating against the federal government to expropriate our country's public lands and give them to the state. That's number one. Number two, the governor needs to speak up against Bishop relative to his legislative approach, which is to take the public's lands, our greatest idea of America's legacy, our public lands, and transform to the states. So that's a critical existential point. The next one is, we work diligently as an industry and as user advocacy groups on the PLI process. The drafts of what were delivered were one-sided, full of poison pills, and we were very public as collegial members of the PLI that those were unacceptable bills, unacceptable legislation. And we were very explicit in saying the monument that Obama created was what we were advocating for and working for on the PLI process. So that process ended up delivering. It just delivered it through a declaration of a monument. So we're saying, back off on your commitment to litigate against the federal government to reverse that, and back off on all other plans to get rid of a monument that is going to be looked at 20 years from now, if it's saved, as one of the state's great assets, like our five other national parks. Another one that we're saying is that because four of Utah's five national parks began as national monuments, somewhat against the will of the local people and the legislature, we believe in the power of the Antiquities Act. There would be no, four of Utah's national parks wouldn't exist without the Antiquities Act. Grand Canyon would not exist. Grand Teton would not exist. So we're calling upon the governor to call upon the congressional leadership to drop their plans to take it down. That's a goal of Mike Lee's. Last and not least, we would like Congressman Stewart to hear from Governor Herbert that plans to starve the new monuments in our parks and our public lands of appropriations is unacceptable. These are America's greatest idea, one of Utah's best assets. They need their funding because they drive the economy. The federal government does do a good job with these landscapes if they can get the funding.
Brian Mathley of the Salt Lake Tribune has said that while the outdoor industry believes in principle the state's public land agenda is antithetical to your interests, that there's not really a consensus in the group to leave Utah, that it would be pretty inconvenient, it would be difficult. So he wonders if you guys would probably stay and just accept the fact that there's always this conflict between you and state leaders. How do you respond to that?
I will have to sort of take umbrage with Brian and say that coming out of this trade show, this is day three, and what I'm hearing from the exhibitors, from the retailers coming here, is that the issues, the long-term issues of the industry, the vibrancy of outdoor recreation, should take precedence over any inconvenience of relocating. Sometimes to make a difference and to believe in your values, you have to work for them and have your actions manifest your beliefs, and it can be painful, and it takes a bit of courage.
Are you talking about particular alternative places? Has that been part of the conversation this week?
I think that's not appropriate for me as an individual to talk about, other than to say there are other venues that would work for this industry very nicely. And I think that if the industry was to, as it considers the possibility of relocating, it would want to relocate to a place that worked for the show and also rewarded a state and its legislators and its governor for policies that celebrate the public lands with policies and actions that show just how seriously they take the public lands and what they bring to quality of life, vibrancy of the community, and vibrancy of the economy.
That's Peter Metcalf. He's founder and former CEO of Black Diamond Equipment. There's a link to his Salt Lake Tribune op-ed on our website, radiowest.org. Peter, thank you for taking the time.
Doug, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Joining us now on the program is Matt Anderson. He's a policy analyst specializing in land issues for the Sutherland Institute, their coalition for self-government in the West. Sutherland, of course, is a conservative think tank based here in Salt Lake City. And Matt Anderson, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I guess I want to begin with some general reaction to Peter Metcalf and Yvon Chouinard expressing almost a kind of ultimatum that the state needs to adjust its attitude if the Retailer Association trade show is going to stick around in Utah.
Yeah, Doug, I think that it's a false narrative and a false choice that's been put out there. I don't think that we have to choose one or the other. We don't have to choose the legislature's path forward with policy or choose putting an emphasis on recreation. I think that all Utahns love the recreation that we opportunities that we have here in the state, and that's what they want. So I don't think it's a this or the other. I think we can have an opportunity to have both.
So you don't want to see the trade show leave, of course.
Oh, no. We are so grateful to have the trade show here. You know, it's important for Utah's economy. I myself, I recreate a lot. I'm an avid hunter and fisher and hiker and camper. And I love having the outdoor retail industry here because it provides a great avenue for me to go and check out the latest gear and be able to go and have it at my fingertips.
I wondered, the question has come up, of course, what is the real role that public lands play in boosting Utah's economy? We'll sort of parse through some particulars here, but just generally, Peter Metcalf, of course, says there's this large intrinsic value applied. Some you can measure, some you can't. It draws people here because we have so much public land. We have access to this land. How do you respond to that just generally?
It absolutely does. You know, Utah's public lands are a treasure. And people around the world have seen that they're a treasure, and they want to come and experience them. So recreation is not just vital to our economy here in the state of Utah, but it's an integral part of our culture as well. It's part of who we are. However, Our lands need to be put to multiple, often complementary uses. Recreation is an important piece of that puzzle, but it has to share it with other important industries like grazing, timber harvesting, and the other great opportunities we have here in the state.
What has the impact been of, say, the Bears Ears Monument? I mean, I guess it's hard to assess that. It's fairly early on in the process. But there is the Grand Staircase National Monument. What impact have those monuments, those parks, had on, and be specific about their effect on rural Utah, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, like you said, Bears Ears, we have not seen the impacts yet. The management plan's not even in place for how the area is going to be imagined. But I'd love to speak about Grand Staircase Escalante because I think it's a great example and indicative of the type of land management that we do get at many of our national monuments. Grand Staircase Escalante, the area was very dependent on grazing. In fact, Mormon pioneers had settled that area and been there for 150 years and been very dependent on the area for their livelihoods. In Bill Clinton's presidential proclamation, he promised that grazing would remain at historical levels. Utah State University did a study a couple years ago, and it found that grazing has actually declined by one-third in the monument. Now, grazing was so important to the area that what it's done is it's really hurt the economy, and people have had
because
to move
of,
away.
Can you connect that to land regulation?
Yeah, yes.
Or just the fact that fewer generationally, people are interested in ranching.
I can speak directly to the management. Okay. Land managers have cut the number of AUMs or the amount of grazing that's gone on there directly. And so people don't even have the opportunity to run their cattle anymore. The result of that is that the amount of public school enrollment in the county has dropped dramatically. And they actually had to declare an economic and scholastic state of emergency in the summer of 2015 as a result. Now, national monuments, all of them aren't bad. I'm not trying to suggest that at all. There's many that can benefit the economy. Zion's National Park started as a national monument and then turned into a national park. It's a great thing. But they're not always the right decision, and especially when they're unilaterally designated by a president, instead of done through a collaborative process where it's done democratically with people from both sides giving their input so we can come to the best land management decisions.
You are contending that in some cases, national monuments, maybe even national parks, are harming the livelihoods of ranchers and natural resource industry employees. Explain what you mean. Like, are you saying that that the recreational opportunities that you're hearing Peter Metcalf and others touting are not as good a job as extractive jobs or not as good a jobs that you'll get in ranching?
What I'm saying is there needs to be a wide breadth of economic opportunities. Like I said, recreation is extremely important to the state of Utah, but you have to have the other pieces of the puzzle too. When there's an economic downturn like there was in 2008 and people aren't visiting our public lands and our national parks, you have to have other industries there to give people opportunities to thrive and produce livelihoods for their families. That's what I'm saying. We have to have multiple uses, and you have to share our public lands with all these multiple uses. It's not putting one above the other, but just making sure that everyone's involved.
How do you respond to what you heard from Brian Maffley, who is saying that San Juan County and some of these other rural counties in some ways kind of have themselves to blame for not embracing the outdoor industry, not making some of their communities more accepting of climbers, for example, and other recreational enthusiasts?
Yeah, I think there's two responses to that, Doug. I think the first one is that these outdoor retailers, they're generally not putting the manufacturing down in San Juan County. They're not setting up their retail shops in large numbers down in San Juan County. So that money's not going there. And then secondly, San Juan County, only 8% of it is owned by private individuals. So they don't have a tax base to come up with a government entity that goes out and promotes tourism. They don't have the money to be able to get there, you know, show the world what beautiful areas they have and the great opportunities for recreation. So that's really the issue. They don't have the tax base there because they have no private property to tax.
How do you resolve that?
Well, we believe here at the Sutherland Institute, the way to do that is by transferring public lands to
the state. Because it seems like that's the only way, right?
Well, there's other ways, too. I mean, you could do some leasing, and you could also open up and make federal regulations less restrictive and do a variety of things. You could take the royalties from, you know, timber harvest, mineral extraction, and give that to the counties to be able to make a government entity to promote tourism. But really, it comes down to a lot of federal overreach. Is the problem.
What are you expecting from a Trump administration in that regard?
That's a great question. Your guess is as good as mine at this point. We know that our federal delegation and others are meeting with Donald Trump on this matter. But like I said, your guess is as good as mine, Doug.
He hasn't really tipped his hand on any of this, I guess.
He hasn't. We know that Senator Lee met with him and that Donald Trump said that he would consider it. That came out in the media last week, but who knows? That really hits the problem, though, Doug, of the Antiquities Act. It gives one individual, one president, the power to, you know, restrict wide swaths of land without local input. All Utahns want to protect our public lands, but it's how we go about doing it. It's making sure that the voices of locals, those who live closest to the land and care most about it, their voices are heard and implemented into land management. That really hits home.
I'm not sure if you are in any position to know the answer to this necessarily, but do you take Peter Metcalf at his word when he says, all right, this time we really mean it? Unless the state can modify some of its positions on some of these crucial issues, we may be out of here. And it's hard to tell, I guess, if he is an outlier or if, in fact, he speaks for a larger group. He's suggesting there's a kind of groundswell going on among outdoor retailers that, with the anxiety over an incoming Republican administration, they really do mean it this time. Any sense on your part?
You know, I can't speak to that because I'm not in the outdoor retail industry. I will say this, though, Doug. What Mr. Metcalf said really highlights the rhetoric that we're seeing on both sides of the issue. This rhetoric isn't confined to one side or the other. And what that does is it stops elevated dialogue. Like I said before, all Utahns want our lands protected. All of us want our future generations to enjoy them. But it's how we do it. And we really have the same goals here. And so my hope is that the outdoor retail industry and our state elected officials can meet together and come to compromise and recognize that they really do share the same values.
Are you at all interested in a compromise on this question of transferring public land to state control? Have you considered, for example, all right, we don't have to take it all. We can take different sections. I mean, how are you thinking about this idea of compromise in that sense?
Well, you know, there's a variety of options in that. You know, of course, Sutherland Institute has always pushed for a transfer of public lands, right. And we will continue to do so because it hits at the heart of a number of our issues. But there's a number of steps that can be taken to mitigate the effects, the harmful effects of federal management. One of them, for example, would be allowing the state to lease some property and show that it can effectively manage our forests, for example. So there are other ways of doing it, but in the end, we believe that a transfer is best because it will help to come to more compromised solutions. When the federal government can come out and make decisions without local input, there really is no compromise. So the idea is if it's given to state control, we can make compromise. That's the issue.
How do you respond to Brian Maffley's point that if federal regulation, if national monuments and national parks have been so destructive to the Utah economy, how do you explain the fact that the state is growing like crazy?
Well, you know, parts of the state are growing like crazy, and
that's your point.
The point. I want to give San Juan County as the perfect example of this. Either part or entireties of three national monuments, excluding Bears Ears, one national recreation area, and one national park are in San Juan County. Yet, San Juan County is the poorest county in the entire state of Utah and in the 30 poorest counties in the entire country. So while parts of the state are doing well, northern Utah, for example, there's others who aren't. And where are the national monuments and national parks located? In southern Utah. They can have good effects, though, in some limited areas. Again, I mentioned Zion's. But it has to be done the right way and with local support and local input.
Matt Anderson, he is a policy analyst for Sutherland Institute's Coalition for Self-Government in the West, joined us here in the studio. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Appreciate your time.
Appreciate it. We'll take another break, and we'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're exploring the impact of the outdoor retailers trade show on the state. The founder of the outdoor equipment company Black Diamond, Peter Metcalf, wrote an op-ed piece for the Salt Lake Tribune this week, calling on state leaders to drop their effort to transfer federal public land into state control and to back off of their opposition to the new Bears Ears National Monument. If they didn't, he said, the Outdoor Retailers Association should take its trade show out of the state. We heard earlier from Peter Metcalf. We also talked yesterday to Spencer Cox, the lieutenant governor of the state. He joined us from the studios of KBYU in Provo. We just had a conversation with Peter Metcalf. Now, as you know, there have been, and I don't want to put it in a negative way necessarily, but to say threats, but they've talked about this before, different leaders in the Outdoor Industry Association. They've talked about being not entirely crazy over the some of the policies of state leaders. They've threatened to pull out, most particularly in 2003, 2004. There was a big conversation. You may know about some of that. But talking to Peter Metcalf today, he said this time they really mean it. It seems like, he says, there's a kind of groundswell among retailers to really push this with the state. Let me get you to react to that.
Well, I'm happy to do so, and you're correct. This isn't the first time. In fact, I think we get a similar op-ed from Peter every 6 months or every year, kind of like clockwork, and that's okay. It's important. It's part of the discussion. We do take it very seriously, but I also want to be emphatic that this is not an us versus them, and I can tell you, I was at the outdoor retailer show yesterday. I met with many of the people that were there, the businesses that were there, and that's not the sense that I got at all. In fact, many of them apologized for the op-ed itself. And we work very closely with the Outdoor Industry Association. And every year, the governor has a meeting with them. We talk about what's working, what's not working. We talk about ways we can improve. We've implemented many of their suggestions. And we understand that there are going to be disagreements on some policy issues, but they're not nearly as big as people think. And I'll give you just one example. Both the governor and the OIA, the Outdoor Industry Association, were actually pushing for a legislative fix on Bears Ears, working hand in hand on that. Now, when it got down to it, it appeared that that was not going to happen. And the OIA decided that they were going to go ahead and support the declaration that the President Obama decided to use. We disagreed with that method. The governor's been very clear on that. But we all agreed that there needed to be additional protections in the Bears Ears area. And so while we may have some disagreements over process and scope, we ultimately agree on what needs to be done. And you know, the other thing I would say to push back a little bit on that is what is gained by leaving the state of Utah? Does that really change anything? Does that solve anything? I will tell you what does change things, and that is what's happened over the past 10 years, over the past 15 years, with the growth of the outdoor industry, the tourism industry in the state of Utah. That is what's changed. Having the outdoor retail show here is helping Utahns to see the importance of conservation, the importance of access to public lands, and the importance of this incredible blessing that we have, these great outdoors that people from all over the world want to come and enjoy. You know, this is in the governor's budget. Spent $21 million in our tourism performance marketing fund. We're asking for an additional $2 million this year, actually $5 million ongoing to replace some one-time monies. But that is having a direct impact. And I can tell you, if the Outdoor Retail Association, if they decide to just leave, that's not going to do anything to accomplish the goals that Mr. Metcalf is seeking to accomplish.
Well, I guess he would say that they're an influential organization in this state, and they're trying to exercise political muscle. And what they're trying to accomplish by threatening to leave is to, on one hand, get the state to drop its effort to transfer federal public land into state control. He has very specific ideas in mind. And one of them, for example, he says, is the state needs to stop funding law firms who are researching litigation against the federal government. That's another one. So I guess that would be his response, is this is what we'll accomplish. We'll get the state to modify its position on this.
Of course. And again, I think that's an important part of the dialogue. And I will tell you that that dialogue has had an impact on the state. It's had an impact with, you know, with our funding for outdoor organizations.
Has the state modified its positions on any of these things, do you think, as a result of that relationship?
I think it's tempered those positions. And there are extremists on each side of these issues. And he is right that there are some that want to completely abolish all public lands and sell those off and be gone with it. And I will tell you, those are a very, very tiny minority of people here in the state of Utah, or people at all that I know in any sort of public role. But what he doesn't talk about is how many times the governor says over and over again that we are a public land state and we will always be a public land state. And he talks about wanting to preserve this land. And I agree. I mean, I'm a conservationist at heart. And I will tell you that if you come to my house and come and look at the national forest that is right next door to where I live, the federal government, the management or mismanagement by the federal government has done more to destroy those forests than anything else in the history of my county. And so we have similar goals. We just disagree about how to accomplish those goals. And I agree with you that what he wants to do is change the trajectory, the decisions of the state. I will also say that there has not been a lawsuit filed, despite many on the other side pushing very hardly to have this lawsuit filed. We didn't think it was appropriate at the time. The governor said this is a last resort, right. and we want to continue to dialogue and work with members of Congress, with the presidential administration, and see what we can accomplish to find that appropriate balance. We may disagree on what the balance is, but the rhetoric that is being used and I will say this, the rhetoric being used on both sides is unfortunate because I think it skews how close we really are on what we ultimately want to accomplish.
Do you disagree at all with the figures you're seeing from the Outdoor Industry Association in terms of the economic impact that they're having on this state? One number that seems pretty striking, that the industry has an impact of $12 billion a year on the state, some 120,000 jobs. I guess the question is, what is the relative value of the outdoor industry and the retail trade show as well? Is there any disagreement in the sense that it's has a pretty powerful influence?
So there may be a little disagreement on the actual numbers. I think the last time we looked at it, we estimated it to be somewhere between $7 and $8 billion, right in that range. But whether it's $8 billion or $12 billion, he's correct in that it does have an enormous impact on the state of Utah. That's how you continue to wield influence, and I think that hearts and minds have changed to a large extent. Again, on the importance of preserving many of these iconic areas of our state. That doesn't mean to say, you know, both things can be true. You can both believe that it is absolutely important to preserve and protect these iconic landscapes, and also believe that there is room for development in some areas of the state, that there is room for extraction in some areas of the state. But I absolutely agree with Peter Metcalf that the impact that the outdoor industry and tourism has on the state is enormous and is growing because of efforts of Governor Herbert, myself, and a legislature that has done more than any time in the history to support these efforts and to increase the value to our outdoor retailers.
But what do you say to the contention that you're hearing from others who say that, in fact, the outdoor industry has displaced viable industries in rural communities like oil and gas development, among other things, that it's the jobs that are coming into these rural communities aren't high-paying, you know, vibrant jobs. They're low-paying service jobs. People are changing sheets in hotels and other service activities, and it's not, in fact, helping these local economies. What do you say to that?
Well, I would say that that's true in some sense, that it's an addition to these economies. And every dollar that comes, look, tourism is one of our greatest exports and maybe our greatest export, because what happens is, you know, we're exporting something that's a renewable resource. It's always here. And people come and they leave their money and then they go home. And that's very good. Any economist will tell you that's great. And you need more of that. But that alone alone is not enough to save the rural areas of our state. You are absolutely correct that far too often the jobs that that are being replaced, instead of $40 an hour jobs, we're seeing, you know, $10 an hour jobs or less, and it's not possible for families to make a living doing that. That being said, though, having a foundation there of tourism does allow for other industry to start to come in, and that's the hope, that we recognize that coal probably will not be around forever. Now, we may disagree on how long it should be around and what we can do there, but the question we're dealing with right now and grappling with is, what can we do to bring other industries that do pay a higher wage, that do make it possible for families to live and work and enjoy these communities that have been around now for generations to thrive. And so we've been working, we just did a tour with the aerospace industry out into eastern Utah, where they went to Carbon County, Duchesne County, they went to the Roosevelt area. We went out to Vernal, Uinta, and we saw some enormous potential there. And so we're hoping that we don't put all of our eggs in one basket. That's a mistake we've made, again, in the extraction industry, but we don't do the same thing with tourism.
Let me ask you finally, Mr. Lieutenant Governor, in Peter Metcalf's op-ed, he wrote this. He said, "We are calling on Governor Herbert and other state leaders to drop their efforts to take down Bears Ears National Monument, drop the effort to transfer public land to the state." So it's kind of like an ultimatum, it seems like he's stating, and my sense from you is that he doesn't speak for all of them. We've heard the same language now from the founder of Patagonia, for example, and there's some sense from Metcalf that others are thinking the same way, that the state needs to do something. And I guess the question is, would the state consider some kind of action, if not backing off entirely, at least engaging in some kind of conversation with outdoor retailers to modify its position on public lands?
So that conversation is already happening, and it's ongoing. In fact, I met with the executive director of the OIA, the industry association, met with many of her team, and we actually have a call scheduled with the governor after this show is over, which we do every year, and that's why I want to be very clear. Our relationship with the OIA has, I would argue, has never been stronger, and we're very excited to continue to have those discussions. Look, I have no idea what's going to happen with the new administration, and anybody that says they do is lying or is fooling themselves. I don't pretend to know. I know we do have some public statements by the Trump administration about their commitment to preserving public lands, and so I think that will be an ongoing discussion. I think, again, we agree that there needs to be protection for Bears Ears. We just disagree on the scope. And so I know that they will be part of that discussion. They have been all along, and that's not going to change. In fact, as they grow in size and political power, for lack of a better term, in the state, I think that input will continue to grow as well.
That's Spencer Cox. He's, of course, the Lieutenant Governor of the state, joined us from the studios of KBYU in Provo. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Thanks, Doug. It's always great to speak with you.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our thanks to our intern, David Boyle. We had technical direction from Michael Havey today. The program is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.